My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money in markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to big-time national parks, it really doesn't get much more iconic than Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado. I mean, really, these mountains are literally featured on Coors Light cans, so that's legit.
Yeah, this park really is just larger than life and overwhelming in the best way, with some of the mightiest mountains in the country. So it's no wonder why Rocky Mountain is not only one of the most visited national parks in America, with more than 4 million annual visitors, but also a symbol of the National Park Service in and of itself.
It's true. When people think of American mountains, these are the types of mountains that come to mind. They're craggy, perpetually snowy, jagged, and filled with epic wildlife. They're basically the Himalayas of North America.
In addition to the mountains themselves, this amazing Colorado park also features many other incredible sites, from some of the most pristine lakes and rivers to hotels, both haunted and dreamy.
After all, this is the kind of place that inspired Stephen King to write The Shining, and any park influential enough to inspire Stephen King and Coors Light is sure to be memorable, to say the least. Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia, a production of iHeartRadio.
We sold our loft in Chicago, moved into an RV, and now we're traveling the country full-time with our dog, Finn, exploring America's national parks. And today's episode is a big one. It's about Rocky Mountain National Park in northern Colorado, northwest of Denver.
It's hard to know where to begin with this park because Rocky Mountain is just so monumental.
So we brought on a bit of help for this episode as our friend Elena Kearson will be our very first guest ever.
We'll bring her on later, though, in the episode to talk about her time with Matt in the park when they first visited together. But in the meantime, let's start with a little bit of background on this quintessential park.
Yeah, I'm so excited. It's really going to be a fun episode, not only because of the Shining references, which we're sure to flood you with, but because it'll have our first guest, who is a dear friend of ours, and it'll be so much fun to have her on and talk about this amazing park. We really need to do Rocky Mountain justice, so we're bringing in the big guns. Stephen King and Elena Kearson.
I love it. So let's first talk about the geography and the history of this region. Rocky Mountain National Park actually protects a portion of the 2,700-mile Rocky Mountain Range, which actually runs all the way from New Mexico to British Columbia. Now, that's big.
It's big. So they couldn't make that whole thing a national park. That would be a lot. But the portion of Rocky Mountain is still huge and pivotal. So this range is often nicknamed things like the backbone of North America, which makes sense since it's so integral to the entire continent. And massive mountains like these do kind of resemble a gigantic spine, I guess, even though that image is a little grisly.
It really does work, especially since the mountain range serves as an important water source for such a large portion of the continent.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people probably look at the Rockies. They just see earth and rocks and such, which makes sense. But water is really everything here, and it's all because of the snow, which is present in some capacity year-round, thanks to the high elevations. It's either completely entrenched in it or just towards the very top. Snowmelt is constantly flowing down off the slopes and into alpine lakes and rivers, eventually spreading out to all three oceans that North America touches.
Getting there.
Yeah, when we visited together, it was in June, so the weather was mostly sunny and warm, but there was still plenty of snow up top and the high elevation peaks. Like Trail Ridge Road was open for the season, but there were still some serious sections with like huge piles of snow.
Yeah, and snow can still happen even in June. I remember like we were visiting friends in the Denver area like the week prior, and this was like early June, and we had heard that Trail Ridge Road was closed again because of snow. And I'm like, what? It's June. What? Like, this is going to mess up our plan. But by the time we were there, it was all fine. And any place where there was snow was paved. And while we were on the road, we stopped at the Alpine Visitor Center along the way. And you actually took a photo of me standing next to one of these walls of snow, which was literally taller than I was, like almost twice as high as me. And granted, this is all kind of pushed over, so it wasn't just like naturally that high. But there's a lot of snow up there. And even crazier was it was warm and I was in shorts. So it was a wild time.
Yeah, and the best of times. Our trip worked out like perfect in terms of season and weather because like the Trail Ridge Road was completely open, which is one of the most highest elevation paved roads in the country.
Yeah.
And it's only open for a few months out of the year due to the like how high it is.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a 48-mile stretch of U.S. Highway 34 that connects the Estes Park side of the park, where we were staying, with the Grand Lake side of the park on the west, which is totally worth visiting and absolutely beautiful. And compared to Estes Park especially, it's much more underrated.
Yeah, it really is underrated. When we went over there, it was just stunning, but it's just harder to get to. And so that's a good thing.
It's a little more isolated.
A bad thing, but yeah. I really feel like Trail Ridge Road is right up there with the Skyline Drive at Shenandoah. It's one of the most epic scenic drives in the entire country. The views and the experiences are really unlike anything I've ever experienced.
I completely agree. I think Trail Ridge Road is like the Skyline Drive of the West. And both of them are just really, really incredible experiences and kind of bucket list scenic drives. I think you should absolutely do it. And just like Skyline Drive and our Shenandoah episode from season one, I think they should both be levels on Mario Kart. Like I said, Skyline Drive should be like, you know, the Rainbow Road of Shenandoah. And I think Trail Ridge Road could also be a special level because apparently I'm just constantly thinking of ideas for national park themed Mario games. And I feel like I'm onto something. That'd be so much fun.
Really, though? Because
I really think
last night we were playing you literally got so mad when I threw a green shell that hit you. And then immediately right after you got hit by this red shell, which also came from me.
They were both
And the you. First match you were going to win. And then I like sneaked by you literally at the line and you wanted to basically throw the game out the window.
First of all, I handled myself very well. I was calm. I didn't overreact. I just put the controller away.
That's not true.
Yeah. And
but we don't have to get overly competitive here, okay? Okay. I know you're going to be mad because I always beat you at Mario Kart. So we should probably think of something like less competitive, maybe like a little puzzle.
Like a puzzle, sure. But knowing me, I'd also still somehow manage to turn that puzzle into a competition and get flustered and upset when I inevitably finish my puzzle last or something. Because the unfortunate thing about me is I'm cursed with this unfortunate combo of being overly competitive, very, very much like cripplingly competitive, while not also like being very good at competitive things. So it's a serious lose-lose for me. Like no matter what activity I try, I wind up being like upset.
Yeah. And I'm very good at competitive things and I'm very competitive. Just ask my cousin Mike. He knows. He knows how to push all the buttons to make me completely flip like I make you flip in Mario Kart.
I kind of enjoy that. I'd like to like witness that because I'm tired of being the only one who loses everything.
I mean, even at our own wedding, like I stormed out because we were playing a game and I got so frustrated with him. But it was just me being an overdramatic
I don't remember that.
That's probably when you ran away to go to like Top Golf. Yeah. And on the day of our wedding when we were supposed to be setting up.
It was the morning.
Yeah.
I wasn't just like MIA from the ceremony because I was golfing.
No, it's fine. But at least we can both agree that Rocky Mountains is this amazing place to drive and hike, especially in the summer.
Yeah, totally. And like you said, this was the perfect time of year to visit. Our drive along Trail Ridge Road was the most incredible experience. Absolutely loved it. So the road was finished and opened in 1932, saving tons of driving time for visitors looking to see both sides of Rocky Mountain National Park, because when Trail Ridge Road is typically closed mid-October through late May, and during this time, it's inaccessible, and it takes you a long time to get around.
Yeah, and if you're able to, like, visit during the summer, the road really captures the essence of the park because it travels through different ecosystems and environments in a relatively like short span of time.
Yeah, absolutely. So from both sides of the park, no matter how you're starting on Trail Ridge Road, it begins by meandering up through aspen trees and ponderosa pine forests, where you're likely to see some major wildlife like moose and elk, both of which we saw, and we actually saw a lot of them. And once the road exceeds the 11,000-foot elevation line, that's when the tree line disappears. And then suddenly, you're driving through a landscape of alpine tundra, a terrain that encompasses about one-third of the entire park.
Yeah, up here, things are very barren and snowy and windy, and it really feels like you're in the, like, ceiling of America.
That's beautiful and perfectly accurate. I've never felt higher, which is really saying something, because we were in Colorado, if you know what I mean. But...
I like how you just paused, like, because what, you didn't want to say marijuana?
I mean, if you want to fill in that gap, go for it.
Trails.
We stopped about halfway across the Trail Ridge Road to hike the Tundra Communities Trail.
Yes.
It's about a 1 mile round trip, not really hard, but it's probably the first Arctic Tundra hike we've done, which,
yeah,
if you count a mile as a hike.
Yeah, this was pretty easy, especially considering how high up we were and windy and cold and kind of hostile otherwise. I've never hiked in an environment like this before. And that was exciting because, like, I've done a lot of hiking, done a lot of hiking in Colorado even, and this was new. And up here, it's incredibly weird and wild. And we saw this beautiful quote and a sign along the trail credited to this woman, Ann Zwinger, from her book, Land Above the Trees. And it read, "The alpine tundra is a land of contrast and incredible intensity, where the sky is the size of forever and the flowers the size of a millisecond." That's...
Damn.
And,
that's really good.
Yeah.
That's and it's perfect. Great. Because, like, the tundra totally feels harsh and unforgiving, but also serene and peaceful.
I would completely agree with that. Probably also because it looks devoid of life up here, with the only noise that we heard coming from the wind, like the howling
wind.
There
was a lot of wind, ton of it. The trail is paved and pretty easy, but once, like, we scrambled up a few rocks to get to the very top of the trail, the gust felt super strong. I mean, I was, like, afraid our hats were going to fly off.
Yeah, I was afraid I was going to fly off, let alone my hat. Like, at that point, who cares? I was
so, like, this is kind of like going back to Guadalupe Mountains when you felt like you were going to fly off.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because if it
well,
is,
that was scary.
If it's the same, then it really wasn't as dramatic as you
No, I think the big difference is at Guadalupe Mountains National Park, like, the trail was literally on the side of a cliff, and I'm like, okay, there's a possibility I could, you know, get blown down into the ravine.
Yeah, this definitely didn't have that.
Here, we weren't close to any edge.
I'm just letting you justify it, so that way people know the difference when they go experience these places for themselves.
Yes, but up here, I loved it, too. I think it was, in spite of the wind, totally worth it for the views. Such, you have these, like, sweeping, endless panoramas of tall, snowy peaks and deep valleys on pretty much all sides of you. I kind of wanted to, like, recreate that scene from Titanic where Leonardo DiCaprio yelled that he's on top of the world, even though, when you think about it, he was at sea level, so very much not the top of the world. That would make sense up here. Like, that line would be perfectly fitting on this trail in alpine tundra.
I think he was more talking emotionally at the top of the world.
But also, no, like, he was, like, a vagabond, which is, like, you know, that's wanderlust, I get it, but, like, he...
Some may say he's nomadic.
I guess, yeah.
Speaking of nomadic, you know, there's actually these times when we have to, like, leave our nomadic lifestyle behind and grab that rental car, which I'm glad we were able to get back to. So that way we could, like, make it through the park because the RV would have been too big for a lot of points in Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the higher elevation and the higher altitude.
Yes. And the wind.
Yes.
Because that's not fun.
It's really not.
Plenty of times been driving on just normal highways where there's a lot of wind, and it's tough to do that in an RV. So I can't imagine doing that up here, driving through alpine tundra with all that howling wind and just how windy the roads were too for like 48 miles. So
yeah, no, it's just, yeah, I'm glad that we didn't have to really deal with that headache.
For sure.
I'm just like, we were continued on to the Grand Lake section or the western side of the park, which is by far the least visited side of Rocky Mountain, because in the off-season months when the Trail Ridge Road is closed, it could take up to 3 hours to drive from one side to the other. But for us, it only took like an hour or so.
Yeah, and that was with, you know, we're taking our time. That we also did some extra stops, though, along the way, like this Tundra Trail. And then another portion that we visited was the Halsworth Historic Site, which was another 1 mile round trip trail. Much easier because it's lower elevation and you're back in like trees and no real snow or anything like that. Definitely no wind. And it was an easy gravel trail that crosses the Colorado River and then leads to an old dude ranch, which I absolutely love saying out loud. I don't know if I've ever been to a dude ranch, but here we went to one.
Yeah. It was a totally unplanned stop, but because neither of us had even heard of this area, but it was really cool to explore. The site consists of several old cabins built by the Halsworth family. And I probably just slaughtered their name, but we're just going to move on with that. We're going to keep on going. Because they used it as a ranch from 1919 to 1974. So it's really not even that long ago.
Yeah, really not. In 1975, the site was transferred to the National Park Service and then wrapped into the rest of Rocky Mountain National Park. And it was also listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1977. This place was cool. I'm really delighted that we did this and discovered it. I had never even heard about this. So it was a good little side trip. I loved it.
Yeah, a little cozy retreat into the woods by the river.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was this absolute hidden gem, a little slice of heaven with cabins like the Rose Cabin, Mama Cabin.
Mama Cabin.
This was long before Wi-Fi was a thing, so the solitude and remoteness of these cabins was really just perfect.
Yeah, I think in small doses. Like, if they were, like, active guest cabins today and we stayed here, I think we'd both probably have millennial meltdowns. We've been there before, so I just know it. They're fun to visit, though, like how we did it, just kind of in and out and peruse, especially since when we passed through, there were National Park Service employees doing these old homesteading demonstrations, like baking biscuits and, like, exhibiting taxidermy and stuff like that. I was really interested in the biscuits. I was, like, hovering around being like, is this just for show or are you actually serving these?
Yeah, and like, it was actually cool because we actually like learned that little fun fact that the Colorado River actually just starts a few miles north and flows right through the park before making its way all the way down through Utah, Arizona, and Mexico. Mm-hmm. So like learning about like these amazing biscuits and where the Colorado River starts, both highlights.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So the Colorado River starts at La Poudre Pass Lake, which is not that far north. Like you said, it was starting to kind of trickle through. It was like a stream at this point when we crossed it. So in a way, if you think about it, the Rocky Mountains are responsible for like Grand Canyon National Park, among other things, which is wild to think about.
That is crazy, though. Like a whole Grand Canyon is just a whole nother thing. Like, like how it was built and formed and I really want to get into that. But, you know, we continued the rest of the way down to the end of Trail Ridge Road to the Grand Canyon Lake side of the park. And it was so beautiful and peaceful. There were plenty of people here, but not nearly as much as the Estes park side.
That was refreshing. And the first thing we did was we stopped to get lunch at this place called Grand Lake Lodge, which is this gorgeous, gorgeous property overlooking Grand Lake in the namesake town below. And the lodge has been open since 1920, so this is iconic and historic in its own right. And again, another surprise, because I had never even heard of it before. And I'm so glad we discovered it, and I'm so glad that we were hungry at the time and that our cravings and appetites were perfectly aligned. Because this is one of the best meals I think we've ever had at a national park.
Yeah.
And I would go back in a heartbeat. The restaurant inside of the lodge that we ate at was called the Huntington House Tavern. And it was so good. So cozy and dreamy. Yeah.
It was this huge, like, rustic restaurant with, like, great locally sourced food, local craft beers, and craft cocktails. Like buffalo meatballs subs and Colorado lamb sandwiches and steak frites made from beef from a local farm.
All very local. And they also had a delicious falafel wrap, too, which I love falafel. And it's one of those things, if I see it on a menu, I have to order it. Even if it, in the context here, it does seem kind of strange, like to have falafel at this, like, Colorado, you know, local-centric restaurant. But it was really, really good. And great hiking fuel, too, like hearty and nutritious.
Yeah, because after lunch, we parked at the East Inlet Trailhead by Grand Lake, and we definitely needed that that fuel.
That boost, yeah.
And then we hiked to Adam Falls. That part was easy and short, and the falls are all, like, raging and loud with lots of incredible photo opportunities, some serious white water at some of those falls.
That waterfall section was pretty crazy. Crowded, too. It was popular, filled with a lot of people, I think in large part because it's so close to the trailhead, so it's easy to get to, and tons of people just, like, shimmying around on rocks, getting different vantage points of the waterfall, which I highly recommend. Loved it. So after Adams Falls, we hiked further along the trail, past some more rivers and waterfalls, and the bright green colors of pine forest, too. Just lots of vivid colors out here this time of year. It's crazy because, like, this river that we're hiking along starts with such a loud, fast-moving waterfall, which is, like, slamming through these series of boulders. But then immediately, like, shortly after, as we're walking along, it immediately gets quiet and still, and, like, it feels like a whole nother waterway entirely. These ponds and like, streams and little inlets in the midst of looming mountains in the background, all just picture perfect.
Yeah, the hikes over on this side of the park are also less steep and strenuous than those on the east side by Estes Park. So it's great for families and anyone looking for a more leisurely experience.
Yes. I'm so glad we're able to visit the Grand Lake area and that we did this, and the road leading there was open. And when we come back, we'll talk more about history, other hikes, regions, and seasons here at Rocky Mountain National Park.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worried he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
And today we're talking about Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado.
History.
Yeah, and now that we've given you a really good taste of this iconic national park, we're going to back it up and provide some more background on this historic region.
Yeah, so long before we were hiking here and eating falafel here, Ute Indians hunted elk in the Grand Lake area some 6,000 years ago. And on the east side, Arapaho and Cheyenne Indians lived on the plains portion of Colorado, frequently hunting in the Estes Park area.
Native Americans actually lived here until the late 1700s, and the populations on either side of the mountains never even saw one another because the mountains were so, like, too rugged and too steep to cross. So tribes stay put. Plus, there was this, like, plenty of food and water where they were, and there was no need to, like, risk hiking over these mountains.
Yeah, exactly. So after the Louisiana Purchase, these Native peoples were sadly pushed out to reservations, and new residents started to move into the area and develop this part of Colorado. And this is when places like Denver and Boulder took shape as boom towns for hopeful miners and prospectors.
Yeah, even the town of Estes Park, which gets its name from Joel Estes, who gave up looking for gold and began a business with his son by hunting meat and supplying it to businesses in Denver. He built cabins in the 1860s, and so the origins of the present-day Estes Park were essentially built on meat.
Yeah, honestly, that's pretty brilliant. And, like, what an innovator at the time, especially. Because there's a ton of elk and deer here, so the meat market is, like, has so much potential, and he capitalized on it. And so after stuff like this, the region began to take shape as a national park thanks to this hiker and conservationist named Enos Mills, who fell in love with the area in the late 1800s and began writing articles about protecting it from further development and commercialization.
Yeah, he actually became a lecturer for National Park Service in 1907 under President Theodore Roosevelt. Our boy.
Our boy.
He was able to catch the attention of important organizations like the Colorado Mountains Club and the Denver Chamber of Commerce, which definitely helped his cause to protect the land.
Yeah, and it wound up being a sort of happily ever after situation because when Rocky Mountain National Park was established in 1915, making it the 9th national park in the country, and even though the entire Rocky Mountain range stretches for thousands of miles, the park only contains 265,000 acres of those, including some of the most iconic peaks in the range, like Long's Peak, the highest in the park at 14,259 feet, whopping. All in all, this park is a hiker's dream. It's got more than 355 miles of trails to explore, from easy and relaxing to terrifyingly hard.
Yeah, like, didn't you actually, like, try and do one of those Long Peaks trails while we were there?
Yeah, I did. I'm not sure what I was thinking, because in retrospect, that's crazy that I was thinking I could do that. But as we all know, that is par for the course for me. I'm out of my mind. It's 16 miles round trip with 4,000 feet of elevation gain, and it's marked as extremely strenuous with an exclamation point included. Like, that's what they have in the trail mark and stuff. So, you know, they're serious.
Can we call you the neurotic nomadic nomad? Or something along those lines?
Yeah.
I think that'd be good. The neurotic nomad.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
But fortunately for your own well-being, the trails, like, towards the top was still too snowy and icy, so you couldn't do the whole thing, right?
Yeah. So it kind of saved me from myself because Lord knows I would have tried. I did wind up parking at the Long's Peak Trailhead, though, on the southeastern side of the park and doing the Chasm Lake Trail instead, which was absolutely beautiful and a much better alternative for me, I think. It leads through these tranquil pine forests and up across these rugged boulder fields before circling around this shimmering alpine lake along this steep, snowy slope. It was actually, like, towards the end, it wound up being so steep and snowy that I didn't finish the whole trail because I didn't have like snow spikes in my shoes and I was super underprepared. I don't have like proper hiking stuff for that type of terrain or weather especially. So I didn't want to slip and slide like all the way down the mountain.
Yeah, we really got to get you better hiking shoes, especially for those like snowy conditions like this.
Yeah, and this was summer too. So that's really saying something. And you can imagine how grueling and impossibly icy things probably get in the winter. I don't think I could get more than like half a mile in.
Yeah, isn't that when you actually visit the park for the first time with Elena?
Yeah, it was right on the cusp of winter. It was mid-November. So in Rocky Mountain terms, that is full-blown winter, yes.
So, you know, what we should do, I think we should bring on Elena to talk more about her time here with you and what it's like visiting Rocky Mountain National Park in the off-season.
So our friend Elena Kearson is one of our best friends from Chicago. We've known her for several years now. Fortunate enough to meet and run in the same social circles. And also, she's just so much fun to either go bar hopping with in Chicago or go on national park adventures. And National Park hop. Yeah. I've been fortunate enough to have been to a few national parks with Elena at this point. She's one of my favorite travel buddies, and she's just always like down for any type of adventure, which I always appreciate. Makes it very easy to plan. And we both are kind of on the same level too. We like to hike and explore and really immerse ourselves. And then when it's all done, go to like a brewery or something. So,
and it's really a beautiful thing. And we wanted to bring on some of our friends, and instead of just getting with the professionals behind national parks or these people who have been inspired, we want to talk about more of the normalcy of traveling to national parks,
right,
and what kind of bond that can bring with your friends.
Yeah. And she's perfect too to provide a perspective because, like, unlike us, these, you know, nomadic people who are traveling in an RV in and out of national parks, she's someone who, she lives in Chicago still, and she has a full-time job, but it just kind of goes to show how accessible national parks are for pretty much, like, anyone, no matter, like, where you're from, what you're doing, what your lifestyle is like, and so forth. Just, you know, requires some planning, but as long as you're down with it and ready to do it, it can, you know, you can make memories together, and that's exactly what I've done with Elena, and we're excited to stroll down memory lane a little bit. And since it was Rocky Mountain in November, memory lane was very snowy. It was a snowy lane.
Elena, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Elena Kearson. I'm from Chicago. That's how I know Brad and Matt. We've known each other for, I don't even know how long we've known each other. Feels like forever. Maybe a good 5 years.
Probably more. Definitely
at
more.
At least 5 years. Yeah,
like we're talking about at 7, 8 years.
At least. Maybe a whole decade. I don't know.
Almost.
That would
right.
be nice. but yeah, I'm out here in Chicago. I'm a tax manager, so don't really, you know, I'm kind of a in the office kind of person. So this is really cool for me to come and talk to you guys about Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yeah, awesome. That was such a cool trip to hear about. Matt was telling me about this this trip to Rocky Mountains for a couple of years before I even got the chance to go to Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yeah.
So I was living vicariously through you, and I know that Matt has so many things that he wants to talk about relive with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, first, I kind of want to give a little bit of background because you and I, Elena, have a really fun and awesome, like, kind of relationship with national parks. Like, we started, Rocky Mountain was not our first park we went to together. And I think the start of that, I remember vividly, like, sitting down with you at a coffee shop in Chicago and, like, planning out a potential national parks vacation. The trip turned out wonderfully. We went to Big Bend National Park in Texas. And that really stuck with all of us who were on that trip. And then, like, in the following years, just that interest continued to grow. And then I think that contributed in a big way to leading us to Rocky Mountain National Park and why you and I wanted to, like, prioritize going there together. And I'm so glad we did. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so fun.
Yeah, the first trip was very well planned, but as I recall with this Colorado-Denver trip, I just sort of tagged along. So that was just kind of me being like, hey, can I join you, Matt?
That was, and I'm so glad.
You know, happy accidents, they're the best.
Yeah, that's all of these trips, I remember them with such fondness. Like, it's such a nice way to bond with your friends, too, because it's different than just traveling to a city. You know, you get to experience something together. And I think the Big Bend trip really solidified that bond, because we still talk about it to this day.
Oh, my gosh. We still have that group text going, like, from that trip.
That group text will never die.
That text thread will never die. Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. So
I think our five-year reunion's coming up.
I know. It seriously is. So this Colorado trip, I remember for the first, like, chunk of it, I was out on, like, a work trip to visit Denver. This was, my first time in Denver. And I was, like, I had some appointments and meetings and whatnot in the city primarily. But I also had a ton of free time, and I had extra days to do whatever. So it wound up being, like, the perfect opportunity to, like, travel with you and kind of bounce around this new environment together. And the Rocky Mountain opportunity was hard to pass up. So
<Yes.
laughs> that was big. And one kind of shocker for me was I didn't realize how, like, non-mountainous Denver was. I always envisioned it as, like, in the mountains, like, in the Rocky Mountains. And
it's
it's not. Yeah, it's, like, pretty flat, and you have to drive, like, 2 hours to get to
Yeah, it's just east of the range.
Apparently. No one told me.
Yeah, you have to drive to the mountains.
Yes, like, quite a
They're
ways.
Not just there.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's, like, talk about our experience that driving day from Denver to Rocky Mountain, because it was, like, such a gorgeous drive. I remember the road that takes you right into the park, into Estes Park, and then to the National Park. You were, like, in a canyon following this, like, windy river, and things are getting snowier and rockier, fittingly, and craggier. And it was really nice just to leave, like, the city behind for a day and, like, unplug and then immerse ourselves in this, like, space, which was really incredible and kind of absorbs you in it pretty quickly.
Yeah, the drive there was beautiful. And I feel like not knowing what to expect, it's even better because it just sort of unfolds right in front of you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember that day being beautiful. I think we definitely lucked out in terms of the weather and whatnot, even though
we
were very much underdressed.
I think
for the park.
We were. And we did not, at least I did not have, like, proper snow footwear for that day at all.
No, I did not bring my snow boots for that trip, not at all.
Because I assumed it would be, like, Denver, again, like, silly mate. Like, I thought the weather or the, you know, snow would be the same as Denver, which was pretty minimal in the city. But, again, they have, like, street plows and people constantly doing that, and that's not the case in the wilderness. So, good to know.
Yeah, and the elevation change. You always
forget
that.
And the elevation change. Oh, yeah, big elevation change.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that very, very vividly.
Yes.
So the spur-of-the-moment trip left you unprepared, basically.
Sure.
In the best way possible. Like, we didn't get caught in, like, a snowstorm or anything. But maybe we're just, like, a little colder than we should have been if we packed appropriately.
That's perfect, though.
And I can handle that. So our first stop was at the Beaver Meadows Visitor Center, which is like the main visitor center near Estes Park, the kind of heart or the gateway to Rocky Mountain National Park on the most visited side. And excellent visitor center. The thing I remember most about this visitor center and that I loved the most was I think this is where you got your first or is this where you bought your passport book, your National Park passport book?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. So which is sad because then I didn't get the Big Bend one, so that's even more reason to go back. Yeah, but yeah, that was like this little book travels with me everywhere now. So yeah, this is the start of the passport book.
I love that because I've talked about how obsessed I am with my passport book, and I feel like whichever park you bought it at, whichever visitor center, just kind of holds extra meaning, extra special meaning. And I love that. I love that there's this connection with Rocky Mountain in particular because this is where you got your book. And I remember you got your first stamp and we were both just so elated about it.
Yeah.
It's a good moment.
The first one. And I get those little stickers because I feel like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that totally like that adds. Yeah.
Day. Yeah.
That's
a
always
cherry
good
on
too.
Top of that.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. So from the visitor center, we kind of wound our way into the park, and the first thing we did was this pretty short trail around an area called Sprague Lake, which was about half a mile round trip, and it's this loop, and I loved it because it was just like pretty quiet. I don't remember other people or many other people being there, and it was the first like physical activity we did in the park, so it was nice to get out into this world and see the mountains looming in the distance and all the snow and ice. It was just really serene.
Yeah. That lake was beautiful. I think we may have been the only ones there for a little bit.
Yeah.
But it felt like we had the whole place to ourselves.
It did. I know. Best part.
It was enchanting.
It was enchanting.
I was looking at some pictures of it. It wasn't a large lake, right? Like you could see from one end to the other, yeah. And it was like all covered in snow, and the whole path was covered in snow. And we just made our way around it. It was really beautiful.
Yeah. Enchanting is a really good way to describe Rocky Mountain National Park as a whole, but especially in front of a lake. Oh,
I know.
Stop.
Yeah, I agree. And that also, I think this highlights why it's so like awesome to visit a park like this in the off season. Like, had we done this in like July or August, I can only assume like Sprague Lake would be swarming with people and the trailhead would be like mobbed or inaccessible, because Rocky Mountain gets so many visitors. And it was nice to do this like mid-November, where sure, things are cold, things are snowy, but like it's not unreasonable by any means and it's not torturous. And it's worth it just to have like these little calm moments of like peace and serenity in nature. And I think that's my favorite way to like experience places like this when, you know, you're not having to like elbow people out of the way.
Yeah. Whenever I go, I try to plan it during off peak times because it's really nice to have a space to yourself because you really feel like you're out in nature. I mean, not that, you know, having other people around is like a horrible thing. It's kind of nice as well. It's comforting if you haven't seen someone for a while to see a friendly human face. but yeah, it really is. It was like a magical little lake. It was really beautiful. I think it would have been a lot different had we gone in the summer or in the spring.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of prefer that we saw the snow version of that lake.
Yeah,
I know.
And
the park itself, yeah.
Right, for sure. So from here, the main like highlight thing that we did that day was we got back onto this main road, Bear Lake Road, and then drove pretty much down to the end of it to this really popular trailhead called Bear Lake Trailhead, which again in the summer I'm sure is just insanity. But because even then, like it was cold and snowy, but like there was still a good amount of cars in that parking lot, I remember. And we wanted to do there was like a series of trails that branch off of this. And from what we read, they seemed like they were some of the most popular like trails in the park. So they just sounded really great. And they all led to like different lakes, all had like really lovely names. Like we did the Dream Lake Trail, which, I mean, that sounds, how can you not?
Yeah, exactly.
With a trail like that. And this one was a bit longer than Sprague Lake. It was about 2 miles round trip. So like 1 mile up to the Dream Lake itself. And then we like looped around the lake and then came back down like another mile. And this one was pretty epic. This is when things were starting to get like pretty cold. My feet were getting wet. But in spite of all that, I'm like, this is, again, like enchanting. And you're like in the forest.
I don't think I was prepared for the elevation change and the climb, because I think we were very much fooled by that first little hike we did around the lake. Yeah. Because it was flat. You didn't have to struggle.
No, that's true.
You had to work at it.
Yeah, that one was like really comfortable and level and open too. It was, you know, so there was like more sunlight that kind of mitigated the chill. But this one was pretty immersive because we were in like in the woods. There was a ton more trees pretty much from the very beginning.
And the whole thing, I think if I recall correctly, the whole path was pretty much covered in snow. So you're just sort of like trying to make your way up these hills. Some of them were much steeper than others, and a little difficult to climb.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember feeling like that you were in the mountains because the elevation changed, and you could feel like it was a lot more difficult to walk.
Absolutely.
As we were making our way to the Dream Lake.
So, right. Yeah, I could definitely feel it. And not just like in terms of like my feet were getting wet, but like my nose, I remember my nose was kind of sore because of the elevation change. And then like my lips were super chapped. So I was like guzzling water and also like tearing through chapstick. Like it was kind of this full body experience. Which, you know.
It was a full body, yeah. I was like, oh, I haven't trained for this kind of body.
Yeah.
I'm not physically fit enough to be here. No, it wasn't that bad, but I think it was just kind of like, the whole thing was just discovering this park. Like, I had no expectations for what we would encounter at all, which, again,
Same.
Made it that much better.
I know.
Yeah, this is
I love that.
Both of, like, beginning of both of your journeys into national parks and just really exploring
yes.
them, you know, as adults for the first time. And so there's just a lot of pieces that you don't know until you experience it. And then once you've experienced it, you know, you change the way you travel, right?
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so,
very much so.
After this first trip there, Elena, what are a couple things that you would bring?
Water.
Yeah.
Yes, lots of that.
A hat. I don't know, just dress appropriately. I guess it depends on the time of year. But just keep in mind that even if you're coming from Denver and it's sunny and warm and you maybe have like a light jacket on, that you may need a couple more layers coming into the park.
Oh, yeah.
And then maybe not the gym shoes with the slippery bottoms, like something with a little grip. Because like if you end up doing those hikes, like the elevation change, like it's pretty significant. So like you end up hiking and you don't want to be like on your hands and knees crawling.
Oh, no. My gosh.
I mean, I guess you can. It's not a bad way to go, so... but yeah, I would say just dress appropriately and bring water and put on sunscreen because the sun
yes.
is always out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And chapstick, I guess, Matt.
You think it's cold and wintry that there's no sun.
Right.
And that is just not the truth.
You got the
snow that reflects the sun onto you, which amplifies it.
I remember like squinting like crazy. Like I needed prescription sunglasses because the sun was like not only hitting you directly, but it's also like reflecting off of this like really bright white snow and ice.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like blindly wandering forward in my like slippery sneakers through the forest.
I was trying to like make sure Matt doesn't fall off a mountain the entire
yeah,
time.
Yeah, right. Or like wander onto Dream Lake and like crash through the ice or something. It all worked
straight onto the lake.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, should I stop him? No, he looks fine.
I'm fine. I did, because I remember I actually did buy, because again, I wasn't prepared with enough layers, but from the visitor center, I did get one of those like buffs. Which kind of you can configure as you please. So I used it as like a makeshift scarf and like wrapped it tightly around my neck.
Yeah, I remember that now.
And that worked.
Good thinking.
There's so many ways that like national parks inspire people or change their mindsets. Like from when you first went to a national park until now, what are some of the changes that you see when you go to national parks? Like, we've been talking about like how it like creates less anxiety for us, or it just clears our mind. What's it do for you?
It's definitely a good like a head clearing kind of moment. You know, when you're there, just. Being in the city all the time and working, you know, sitting in front of a computer, for me, you know, and sitting all the time, I think I really love being out there and walking and hiking, discovering, you know, like we'll get the little books with like, what are the trees? What's the foliage? You know, like all these different kind of the history of the parks and just learning about it. I think there's a greater appreciation for all these places. And the more times you go, the more you appreciate being out there. So, like now when we plan vacations, it's usually like we have to have at least one vacation during the year where we go to a national park.
Yes.
It helps me unwind and you know, from the stress and stuff. And it's a, you know, it's different being out in nature. And the fact that you don't have cell phone reception is actually beautiful. I very much enjoy it. Like be prepared for it. But I like not being connected for a little bit.
Absolutely. It's one of the best feelings ever. And I love the feeling, the struggle of like having wet shoes or being unprepared and getting through it and learning from it. Because like those experiences are what like just really just you push yourself outside of your comfort zone in a way. And you've learned from that. And it like,
true.
I know it sounds silly, but like learning how to be prepared there helps me learn how to be prepared more in the business world. And it makes me think of things differently when I get back. So because you've just been able to shut out. So that's personally for me. But I just love those instances where you kind of just get that 360 experience. You're like, I've gone and experienced this, and what am I bringing back from this trip besides peace? Because
yeah,
that's
and then
beautiful.
There's, yeah. And there's moments where you like accomplish something, like you get to the end of a trail, or it's like, you know, and it's at the top of a mountain or something, and you feel super accomplished for doing something like that, you know, on top of like the views and the amazing, the challenge of it all. So I also like that part of it, just kind of pushing yourself a little harder every time and finding a trail that you normally wouldn't pick, just to get out there and to experience something different.
Oh, yeah. So true. I love it, too. And there's also an element that I find with especially an experience like this, like a wintry Rocky Mountain National Park, is it's somewhat humbling to be reminded like, oh, there's still so much to learn and discover. Not only just in terms of, like, ecology and wildlife and whatever, but, like, within myself, like, oh, like, I'm woefully underdressed for this. Like, I do not have a full grasp on this national park or any national park. And it's nice, and it feels good to kind of be humbled by that in these, like, really epic places that remind you in not-so-subtle ways that, like, yes, you're just... you know, a little human being like here to explore and drink it in and have this experience and grow from it. And sometimes that's wetter and icier than I would ideally like, but I walk away feeling much better for it. And then it also makes for much better memories, you know, too. Like a park like this during a time of year like that are just some of my favorite moments because they're so special and so kind of individualistic. You know, I like that too.
Yeah, humbling is a good word. I always feel humbled when I visit a national park, just because they're always so much bigger than you think they are, even when you know how big they
are. Right,
that's very true.
I know, it's hard to comprehend.
Enchanting and humbling; those are the key takeaways.
Yeah,
from all of this.
Perfect.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian Mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market. as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
And today we're talking about Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado.
Food.
All right, so we really got to talk about Estes Park more. Yes. The town where we were staying just for a few days.
Yep, the town that Meat built, because Mr.
No.
OG Estes,
yep, that's right.
You know,
yeah,
started butchering deer and selling it to local restaurants and whatever.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool and popular place, and cool by meaning cold.
But, yeah, almost year-round.
In June, this place is just really bustling and busy. So be sure to make sure that there's campgrounds, you know, you want to reserve way in advance for hotel reservations, anything like that. We were lucky and, like, got last-minute reservations, but the good thing about our lifestyle is, like, we can quickly change things. But
yeah,
if you're planning a trip, you want to make sure you have reservations because it's too risky.
Too risky. And I'm not at all comfortable with that type of risk, which is kind of ironic because, like, my hiking lifestyle, apparently I throw that out the window and I just put my life at risk on these treacherous trails, apparently. But this type of risk is what scares me, like not having a potential RV spot. I freak out.
He does.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it all worked out and we were able to spend some time here because it's really, really lovely and lively in the summer.
It was perfect. We were there at the perfect time. And Estes Park is like really where it's at. Of the more than 4 million annual visitors to Rocky Mountain National Park, most people at least come through here, if not stay here. And it shows with so many touristy shops and restaurants and especially a booming fudge shop scene and ice cream shop scene. Like, this is a very sweet
place.
By
booming, you mean there's like 20.
20. Like, and I think that's two blocks. Yeah.
It's crazy. There's so many fudge shops. Estes Park may have been built by Meat, but it's definitely got a sweet tooth now.
I know. There's a lot here. I don't know how they all stay in business. It's kind of astonishing to me. But you and I just wound up getting some ice cream from one of the, you know, 30 ice cream shops here and strolling around the cute streets. And it was really nice, like an early summer evening. And then you wound up dropping yours in the ground and the stroll was over.
Yeah, at least I got a few good licks out of it.
Yeah, you did. And, you know, it was great otherwise. And ice cream in a cone is another risk I'm not comfortable with. And I think this is proof of that for this very reason. I always get like worried that I'm going to spill it like that or that I need to lick it really fast. Otherwise, it'll melt all over me. It's like a race against the clock.
You definitely overthink things when it comes to ice cream.
Yes. And underthink things when it comes to my physical capabilities, I guess. I admit both of those things.
Yes. And right there in town of Estes, I really love the farmer's market, which we're going to have our friend Tim Burton on here coming up on a next episode and of Burton's Maplewood Farm. And he sells his 100% pure and barrel-aged maple syrups there. And I just really, really love it. And I can get behind it. It's something that I love working on Tim with and, you know, helping him out throughout the road and our travels at different events. He's a really great guy. So I'm really excited to talk about that in the next episode.
Yeah.
But what else did we really love about Estes Park?
I think we both know the answer to that. It's the Stanley Hotel.
Yes.
And it's time to talk about the Shining Hotel, a.k.a. It's everything that I've ever dreamed of or had nightmares about, I guess.
It's this beautiful, vintage-looking, colonial, like, revival-style hotel up on the hill overlooking the heart of Estes. It served as the inspiration for Stephen King's Overlook Hotel in the book.
Yeah, and it makes sense. The Stanley Hotel first opened in 1909, so it's been around a very long time. And when Stephen King stayed here in 1974, I can totally see it being isolated and getting kind of cabin fever in the winter since Estes Park was much less developed at the time and not nearly as much of a year-round destination like it is today.
Yeah, he and his wife stayed here at the end of the season, right before the hotel closed for the winter. So it was probably like eerily quiet and empty, and the room he stayed in, room 217, is still the most requested room at the Stanley Hotel.
Yes, it is. And even though that notorious room in the movie is changed to 237, so that guests wouldn't be too terrified to stay there, you know, that's a fun fact. But silly them, because there are tons of people out there who seek that stuff out, and it, not only is it not a deterrent, like, people aren't going to be too scared of it, but it's become like a little tourist attraction in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it shows the hotel fully embracing it by doing stuff like that. And they host these haunted tours as well, which we need to do. We didn't do that, but.
No, we definitely have to go back to Estes Park, mm-hmm. Grand Lake.
Oh, more time in Grand Lake. And it'd be really cool to stay at the Stanley Hotel.
Mm.
I love that.
Yes. In addition to the inspiration for The Shining, though, there's like reports of like paranormal activity here. And the hotel has been featured on shows like Ghost Hunters. So stay here if you dare.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure I could do that. Paranormal stuff really creeps me out. I could do like the Shining like inspiration. Like that's one thing, but paranormal activity, if it's anything like the movie, which really messed me up, like really did. I don't know if I could do that. I think we're probably better off just coming to the Stanley Hotel for cocktails, which we did. And it's a fun way to do it. The only thing that'll haunt you there is potentially a hangover.
That would be so worth it, though.
Absolutely.
Because the bar there is fantastic. We came two different times when we were in Estes Park, right?
Yes, we did. We liked it so much that we came, I don't know if it was two nights in a row, but we definitely came twice.
Yeah, and the drinks are like totally legit, and the vibe is like totally cozy and like old school. I mean, I think I got a Vucaré.
Did you?
Your favorite. I really want to say that inspired me to like get it more Vucarés.
Into Vucarés, yeah.
Oh, no, but it was Vucaré.
Oh.
It was Vucaré. That's right. Cause
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's
how
right.
Clever and
I remember
perfect.
Now.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember that, but
no,
it sounds good.
No, I'm lying. The Rocky Mountain View is what they called it.
Oh.
And it was spelled V-I-E-U-X, like Vucaré.
Oh, well, that's equally clever.
And it was just about it. So, yeah, the Rocky Mountain View is the cocktail.
Nice. So the main restaurant here at the Stanley is called Cascades, but we just visited the Whiskey Bar, which is attached and has a lot of small plates off of that same menu. And then the drinks are like the front and center. They mostly focus on the super kind of boozy whiskey-based drinks, obviously. And I love that they have something, in addition to your clever thing, they have a drink here called Red Rum Punch, because of course they do. They're just totally embracing The Shining. It's made with rum plus framboise, blackberry liqueur, lime, pineapple, agave, and it sounds great. It's like a fun, boozy, like fruity punch.
Yeah, they are. It's really amazing. They have amazing
awesome.
Old fashions and Manhattans. They have the whole shebang.
Yeah, I think I remember the drink I had both times was this like basically banana Manhattan.
Yeah. Top banana
really
Manhattan.
Good. Top banana of Manhattan. It is essentially a classic Manhattan, which is like one of my go-to drinks. But this one had the addition of banana liqueur and Amaro. So smooth.
So
like
good.
Not at all sweet. Like banana things could be, they can veer into like cloying territory and they taste like the, what's that? Like banana runts, you know, where it's just like bright yellow. It doesn't like taste like banana. It just tastes like the color yellow.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know what? The good thing is, if you are not satisfied by great cocktails and you're still like kind of creeped out by The Shining and paranormal activity stuff, it will be helpful to know that Dumb and Dumber was also filmed here.
Yeah, that was a nice surprise, especially a much like appreciated dose of levity. And I had no idea. I didn't know that was filmed here, and that's saying something because Dumb and Dumber used to be like one of my favorite movies, or probably still is. I love that movie.
It's been a while since we've watched it.
Yeah.
I think it's time.
It's time. And like, because this is that. I remember the scene, like the setting perfectly. This is like where Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels go to this lavish gala that's like way, way above their pay grade. And they're dressed like neon cartoons, basically. Like one's in like a bright orange tuxedo. The other one's like in like a light blue.
That's
remember?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Such a good scene.
They stand out like sore
thumbs. Until they like basically kill an owl.
They kill an owl. With a champagne cork? Is that right? They, pop a bottle of champagne and then kill this, rare owl?
Yeah. Classic Dumb and Dumber. That's classic something we would Dumber. Do. I feel like maybe.
What? I would never. First of all, I would never be caught dead.
I mean, not on purpose, on accident, we would accidentally do that. Of course, we don't have the best of luck sometimes.
Sure. I mean, fortunately, we haven't done something that egregious yet, but.
Luckily, it was just in the movie.
Right.
My favorite.
So there's a lot to unpack with Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yeah. Lots of options with this one. Big park, big experiences.
What is your favorite thing about Rocky Mountain National Park?
Well, I would say the Trail Ridge Road in general, but more specifically, I really love that trail we did kind of at the top of it, the Tundra Communities Trail.
The one that's only a mile, right?
Yeah.
Oh, which, that was a really good time.
That's great. I liked it because it was a completely new experience for both of us to hike in an environment like that, alpine tundra. And the weather, aside from the wind, the weather was perfect hiking weather. The views were just phenomenal, nothing else I think either of us have ever seen. And it truly felt like you were up perched on the ceiling of the continent, which is hard to describe, to feel that high up and overlooking so much.
I remember when we got there, we actually made a little video, and I think I screamed.
Did you?
We made it to the Rocky Mountains.
Oh, yeah.
And
you had to scream because the wind was so loud.
The wah, wah, wah effect. Mm-hmm. While I was screaming because the wind was so heavy. It was, it's really good.
I remember I was in the background of that video, crawling on the rocks, on all fours, trying to just keep myself together. Yeah. And lower my center of gravity because it was intense, but also clearly super memorable and amazing. So I think that was probably my favorite part. What about you?
My favorite part, gosh, this one was really difficult because there's just so much history there. So much culture, and I loved Estes Park.
Gorgeous.
I love the Stanley Hotel, but I'd have to say was going into the cabins and seeing the taxidermy and the fresh made biscuits and the culture behind right before it became a national park.
Mm-hmm. The Dude Ranch. Yeah, the Colorado River.
Yeah, because it was a really pretty walk, and it was fun, it was cozy. I feel like I could, hang out there for a day and just have a great time, because I really like to relax. And opposite of you, where you like to, climb to the toppest, the highest mountains you can find. And so I think it's just personality style. I would really love to just relax and stay there for a day. But I don't think you really can. I mean, you can, but you would be that's a waste of a whole day.
It would be nice, too, if they, turned it, if there was some sort of B&B option where they, ply you with biscuits in the morning and you can just chill out in, the Rose Cabin. One of the cabins you can walk through and you see, just this preserved space of what it was like there originally. And it looks really nice and homey. I think it would be a lovely place, maybe with some more modern amenities like Wi-Fi or whatever. That it would be nice because I don't want to just sit in silence for 24 hours or whatever.
I would love that, but maybe okay. You know what's actually really good? The trails that we didn't need hiking equipment. But there's a lot of trails that you do. And that one you did, you needed the hiking stuff. So a couple things that you could bring are definitely hiking sticks.
That would be very helpful here.
The shoe.
Have snow spikes.
Snow spikes.
That you can put in your shoes. Because I've hiked in those in New England. My dad has some. So when I've gone on hikes with him, I've worn them. And they're amazing. They make a huge difference. And I really could have used something like that here when I did the Chasm Lake Trail.
There's some that you can even do cross-country skiing on in the winter, not when we were there. But so there's definitely a lot of hiking options. So when you're planning your trip, make sure to think about when you're going, what trails they're going to be, and what specific equipment you need for hiking, because there's a lot of hiking that's available here. And it's it's probably one of the most diverse hiking parks that I've been to because of the ability of snow, cross-country skiing, like kind of bouldering. There's actual like rock climbing. I mean, there's just about everything in Rocky Mountain National Park.
There really is. It sounds cliche, but this is one of those places where there truly is something for everyone. Every age, ability, interest level, you know, whatever you're looking for, it's bound to have it. Whatever type of view you want, hiking trail, all of it. It's an incredible place, and it's very, very fun to explore, whether it's on your own or with a partner or a family or a large group. It's fantastic. And then you can hang out at Nestis Park after and just have the best time eating ice cream and fudge.
Another great thing you could bring, though, is when you're doing these hikes, if you're going to be a little bit more hardcore, to bring, like, there's cans of oxygen, different things like that, or camelbacks, so we have a ton of water. Because if you're going on a 16-mile trail, it's not like one bottle of water is going to get you.
Oh, gosh,
it.
No.
You're going to need a camelback. You're going to need snacks and trail mix and things like that. We didn't have enough time to, like, fully unpack and, like, repack and do something like that big. But I think it would be fun to go back in the winter and do that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because it's such a great time.
Yeah, and then another point is when we were there, and throughout summer, June, July, August, into September, too, it can be a madhouse. The parking lots fill up very early, and some of them are rather small. So it's advised that you get your day started early, because you don't want to, like, plan your day and have this trail in mind that you want to do and then drive all the way there to find that there's no space whatsoever.
Absolutely.
I saw that happen to a lot of people. Fortunately, that was not the issue with us. We had a rental car that was compact and small enough that we could get into a lot more spaces than the RV. But
in the winter, you don't want to have a compact car. You're going to want to have something that's four-wheel drive. You're going to want to make sure you have, like, snow chains. There's definitely different things that you have to pack for when you're coming to Rocky Mountain National Park, depending on the season.
Yeah.
So for us, summer, compact car is perfect. Winter, don't even dream about coming in a two-wheel drive.
Yeah, no, really.
What do you think is something else that we would bring? Layers, of course. Right? We would have to bring layers. And again, even in the summer, we had layers. We had, like, a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, and a jacket. Mm-hmm. So that way we could shred or go depending on our elevation, because that 1,000 feet of elevation difference makes a difference.
Yes, it really does. And when we did the Trail Ridge Road, I was wearing shorts and then initially, like, a t-shirt when we're in the Estes Park area, then again in Grand Lake. But while we're up there doing the Tundra Communities Trail, I had to put a jacket on.
What jacket that is?
My Winners Don't Quit on Themselves Beyonce jacket, of course.
The Bruins jacket. Oh,
no,
that's right.
Not a Bruins jacket.
Kidding.
But yeah, so it's good to have stuff like that. And it's light enough where you could easily carry it along and then throw it on if you need, or tie it around your waist if it's getting too warm, whatever. So that's advised.
Yeah. So between layers and snowshoes and snow chains and all these
walking
different
sticks,
things, there's
sticks,
so many things that you need to bring when you decide how you want to visit, how you want to find your park, how you want to discover it. What you need to do is you need to think about the research behind when, how, and why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But really, Rocky Mountain is right up there as one of the most iconic national parks in the country. And it's an absolute must-see for anyone into hiking, especially.
Yes, anyone into hiking, and also anyone into horror novels, Coors Light, and fudge, apparently, too.
You've been listening to Parklandia, a show about national parks.
Parklandia is a production of iHeartRadio.
Created by Matt Kerouac, Brad Kerouac, and Christopher Hasiotis.
Produced and edited by Mike Johns.
Our executive producer is Christopher Hasiotis.
Our researcher is Jesslyn Shields.
A special thanks goes out to Gabrielle Collins, Crystal Waters, and the rest of the Parklandia crew.
And hey, listeners, if you're enjoying the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people like you find our show.
You can keep up with us on social media as well. Check out our photos from our travels on Instagram at Parklandia Pod, and join in on the conversation in our Facebook group, Parklandia Rangers.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
And as always, thank you for listening.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.